The Supreme Court hears arguments today in a case testing the federal government's one strike and you're out of public housing rule. The regulation was first enforced during the Clinton administration. It allows federal housing authorities to evict families from public housing when a family member is caught anywhere with drugs. NPR Legal Affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg reports.
Federal law requires that any public housing authority receiving federal money must include in its leases a so-called one-strike provision. The provision informs the lease signer that any drug-related criminal activity on or off the premises engaged in by the tenant or any member of the tenant's household or any guest of the tenant shall be cause for eviction. The law was adopted at the height of the crack epidemic in an effort to prevent public housing projects from becoming havens for drug dealers. But tenants soon began complaining that innocent family members, parents, grandparents, and children, were being evicted when they had no knowledge or control over a single guilty family member. The case before the court today was brought against the Oakland Public Housing Authority by four tenants, three of them elderly grandmothers caring for extended families of children and grandchildren. The fourth tenant is an elderly disabled man whose visiting caregiver was found with crack in his possession. The grandmothers have all lived in the project for long periods. Barbara Hill is a 67-year-old nurse who's lived there for 30 years.
When I came home from work, my grandson saw me parking, and he went to hollering, and, "Grandma, come here, come here, come here." And I hurried up and parked and came, and they was putting the eviction notice on the door.
According to affidavits filed in the case, Mrs. Hill's grandson was observed by housing police outside the building with a friend who was smoking marijuana. The grandson was found not to have any drugs, but admitted under questioning that he had smoked too, whereupon the whole family was served with an eviction notice. Mrs. Hill says her grandson had never been in trouble with police and that she had no way of knowing what he was doing that day.
It is not fair. I could understand them throwing people out that violates the law. And I have not violated any law in that unit since I've been there.
Another grandmother, Mrs. Pearlie Rucker, also protested her eviction, noting that she had done everything she humanly could to prevent her mentally disabled daughter from using drugs, even routinely searching the daughter's room. Thus, Mrs. Rucker said she should not be held responsible when the daughter was arrested with drugs three blocks away from the housing project. Hill, Rucker, and the others went to court to stop their evictions, and a federal appeals court ruled that Congress did not intend innocent tenants to be evicted because of the actions of others when the innocent tenant had taken reasonable steps to prevent criminal drug activity from occurring or could not reasonably exercise control over the culpable household member or guest. The appeals court said that if, as the federal government claims, every tenant could be evicted because of the off-site actions of a single family member, the results would be nothing short of absurd. The statute would then permit the eviction of a whole family if a tenant's child was caught smoking marijuana while visiting a friend on the other side of the country. Indeed, in a related case in Tennessee, the Memphis Housing Authority asserted in court that eviction would be appropriate if a pizza delivery person entered a public housing tenant's home in possession of drugs, even though the tenant had no knowledge of the drug-related activity. The issue of just how much eviction power housing authorities have under the public housing law will be before the Supreme Court today. Bill Mayer represents public housing authorities across the country. He contends that a public housing lease is like any other lease in setting out terms and conditions.
The tenant enters into the lease and agrees to ensure that members of the family or guests don't engage in criminal activity. It's not seen as unreasonable to enforce the lease as it is written and, we believe, authorized by the law.
But Paul Rennie, representing the tenants, will tell the justices that federal and state agencies cannot just take away someone's property rights.
The law is well settled that if you have a property right, the government does not have a right to come in and take that property away from you without providing you with the due process of law. And due process of law is allowing you to present the fact of your innocence.
But Bill Mayer counters that a public housing lease does not constitute a property interest. The property, he notes, is owned by the government, not the tenant. And public housing leases are not like other leases. They're not time limited. They're in effect endless. The tenant's lawyer, Paul Rennie, responds that the government cannot have it both ways, claiming that a lease is binding in all respects, as any other lease would be, but different enough to mean that a rented apartment is not a home and thus not property, as other apartments would be. Rennie contends that if the government's interpretation of the law is correct and innocent tenants can be evicted, then the law is unconstitutional. Allowing innocent tenants to be evicted for the actions of others, he argues, would be so arbitrary as to be abusive. And under the Constitution, the state is not permitted to revoke benefits arbitrarily.
It is ripe for managers who want to play favorites, for managers who want to extort. It does open itself up for that kind of possibility.
But the Public Housing Authority's Bill Mayer says the government's eviction policy is a reasonable one, given the fact that it's seeking to allocate a very scarce resource and can provide public housing only for 25% of those who are eligible.
Most housing authorities have very long waiting lists that if one family is removed from public housing because its members engage in criminal activity, there will be another equally needy family occupying that unit whose members are not likely to commit crimes.
Mayer says that public housing authorities simply have no way of ascertaining whether an individual tenant knew about the drug activity of someone in the household. He concedes that the housing authority doesn't know what else Pearlie Rucker or Barbara Hill could have done to prevent the disabled daughter or the grandson from using drugs.
The question of what knowledge a tenant has or doesn't have is largely beyond the ken of the housing authority. They have no way of knowing, and accordingly, they have no way of proving those things.
So in the end, he argues, the community's interest must come first.
This is one of those situations, really, where we have the interest of individuals, that is to say, their hardships and their individual concerns, in a sense, set up against the more communitarian question of how does this affect the neighbors, or how does it ultimately redound to the ability of a housing authority to do its job, to provide housing for low-income families that's safe and decent and physically satisfactory.
Has this worked?
It's worked to some extent in some places and in other places less well.
A Supreme Court decision is expected by summer. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.